Again, my name is Roy, I'm an alcoholic, and I got sober in India, and AA has been around in India. It first came in 1940. American pilots were volunteering with the Canadian and with the British Air Force, and they were flying out of Calcutta, and they started the first AA meeting in India on Calcutta airfield. And when the Second World War was over, the Americans went home and the meeting didn't last. And then there was no AA in India till 1957. And then this Canadian guy, a Canadian diplomat, he came in and he put an advertisement in every leading newspaper in India. And a guy in my hometown replied to that ad, went to New Delhi, stayed at the Canadian embassy for 2 weeks, and got sober. Another guy saw the same advertisement in the paper, and he was actually a brigadier general in the Indian Army, and he was up in the Himalayas fighting one of the various wars we usually have. So he wrote to this Canadian in New Delhi, and so Charlie the Canadian mailed a big book to Trevor Kay up in the mountains, and his story is in the third edition of the big book. It's called Life Saving Words. So Trevor gets the big book up in the mountains, and he basically goes through the program, gets to the fourth step, writes a fourth step, and in the fifth step it says, the fifth step may be postponed until we find someone suitable. And he had to hold on to that for about 5 months till he was actually able to come down from the mountains on leave and meet with his sponsor Charlie in New Delhi and do the fifth step. And after that, AA took off very slowly in India. We have 26 states, we have 17 languages, we have probably 300 dialects, and most people can't read or write. AA started out as really recovery for the elite. If you could read and write, you could make it to an AA meeting. From 1957 to 1975, the meetings were only in English because none of the sahibs over there would bring their cooks and their drivers and their gardeners who are drinking problems to the meeting, because it's a very classy society and you can't let them know I got a drinking problem. And then finally somebody bit the bullet and took Hussein Bhai along for his first meeting, and he didn't speak any English, so all the sahibs started sharing with this guy in Hindi, and then AA exploded because he brought all his buddies along to meetings. And these guys couldn't read and they couldn't write, but they could understand what is being said, they could follow directions. The most spiritual experience I have personally had in Alcoholics Anonymous has been, and I've had this experience many times, has been to be approached by someone who can't read and can't write and ask me to do a fourth step for them. I can't tell you how spiritual it is to be sitting down and writing down. It's a lot of work, you got to do that, but that someone's trusting that what he's saying to me, I'm writing down, and that I'm writing down a fact, and I'm writing down what he says, and I'm going to, you know, share that back with him. That to me has been the most spiritual experience. My drinking story is really simple. I learned to drink, I got drunk, and I stayed drunk. And in the course of staying drunk, I went through 4 jobs, a broken engagement, a couple of other allegedly meaningful relationships. an enlarged liver, a motorcycle accident which almost left me for dead, and a failed suicide attempt. And that's what it was like. Countless attempts to stay sober, countless attempts to only get wasted this weekend and never do it again. And that's what it was like. What happened was, I went to my first AA meeting in 1984 and it wasn't for me. I was 22 and I was too young. And then I went back in 86 and it still wasn't for me because I was still too young. And then in 88, and then in 1990, after this accident, I went in for my first AA meeting sober. And they explained about the disease of alcoholism, which I identified with, and they talked about the steps, and I didn't like the steps, and so I went out and I drank again and again and again. And my sobriety date is April 22nd, 1990. Now, when I came back, my first day back, my first sponsor, Franco, he took me through step 1, 2, and 3 in the first 10 minutes that I met him. You know, I was broke, I was unemployed, I was single, I was uneducated, and I was living with my grandmother. He said, your life's unmanageable. And I couldn't stop drinking. He said, that's fine, you've done good step 1. I could not or would not believe in God. And he said, why are you asking me to sponsor you? And I said, because you've been sober 16 years. You got sober when you were 20. You obviously know how to do this thing. And he asked me a simple question. He said, would you acknowledge that where alcohol is concerned, I'm a power greater than you? I said, yeah. He said, good. You've done a good step too. And he said, are you willing to do anything I ask you to do to stay sober? I said, anything. He said, great. You've just taken step 3. And then he gave me a couple of bucks and asked me to cross the street to the store and buy a 200-page line notebook and come back. And I started step 4. Now, at that time, we had only 100 meetings in the entire country. We had only 100 big books. A few people here and there maybe had a 12 and 12. So the experience handed down was mostly word of mouth. Each group had a big book, and it would only be taken out for the meeting and would be displayed on the table. So the book stayed sober. A lot of us did. So Franco sat down with me and he said, well, on page 1 of this book, you write down, I am a liar. And after some argument, I did. And then he said, okay, what's the first thing you remember? And I remembered something from, you know, first grade in school. And starting from that memory, he asked me to write the story of my life. And there I was, another Hemingway in the making, 180 pages, rewrites, tear that page out, punctuations. But when I finished with this fourth step, we got together. And he sponsored me the way he was sponsored. He took my fourth step and he sat down with a piece of paper and he read it and he kept raising his eyebrows and pulling faces and making sound, and stuff like that. Very disconcerting. You know, you're sitting at the other end and you're wondering, what on earth is going on? And every so often he's scribbling on this paper. And at the end of that fourth step, he gave me this sheet of paper, or it may have been two sheets or one sheet, or I don't know. But he gave me these papers, and there was a list of my defects of character, which he had picked out from my story. And there was a list of the amends I needed to make. I didn't have a choice. He said, these are the amends you need to make. And that was my fourth and fifth combined. He said, is there anything else you haven't written? Sure there was. There was this, you know, take it to the grave kind of stuff. So I talked about all the interesting criminal and sexual activities that I had not written down. And after that, we burnt my fourth step. Again, this is the way he was sponsored. And that was my fourth and fifth step. A year later, I was ready to kill myself. Because I had written down this whole encyclopedic volume of my life. But I still didn't know why I did those things. And I celebrated my first anniversary in AA, and 2 seconds before coming into AA, I would put on my AA face. Hey Roy, how's it going? Great. One day at a time. Let go, let God. And the thing was, I was the youngest person in the country to get sober. So it was terrible because, you know, anytime I went for a meeting, oh, young blood, get Roy to speak. Let's, you know, stuff like that. So it was terrible for my sobriety, terrible for my ego, because almost every day I'd be asked to speak. So I had to put on this face. Hey, 28 and sober, not like you old crocs. You know, but inside, I was full of shame and fear and anger and not knowing what, is this how I'm supposed to feel? I thought, you know, after these steps, life's going to be great. So I said to Franco, that's it. I'm retiring from AA. I got my 1 year. I'll come back once a month just to show you guys I'm still sober. And by the grace of God, my sister sent me a copy of the big book. She was living in San Francisco. And my aunt, who was living in Australia, sent me these tapes of these two American guys, Joe and Charlie. And I started listening to those tapes, and they were talking about the big book, and they were explaining their experience with the program of recovery. And like Gary said, it blew my mind. Now, I thank God today that When I got the tapes, I did not get those Joe and Charlie worksheets that they give out with those tapes. So I didn't have the advantage of being, or disadvantage of being convinced of being confused with a four column inventory. So I listened to the tapes and I went to the book and I followed the directions, and it was a great experience, very liberating. And I had, some of you met a sponsor of mine who recently visited from India. He was the first guy I sponsored there. I had to wait till he finished his fourth step so that I could do my fifth step with him this way. And that was such a liberating experience. Later on, somewhere in the book, it says that the real purpose is to convince the guy that he can get well regardless of anybody. All he has to do is develop a relationship with God. And that's my understanding of sponsorship, is that I help someone get through the steps by sharing my experience. After that, we are friends. I can do my 10th step with Eric, just as he can call me up and say, I need to do a 10. The big book really doesn't talk very much about sponsors. I can't even remember if it uses the word, except in the stories. The 12 and 12 does speak about that. Then, a couple of years later, somebody sent me the Joe and Charlie worksheets. Now, instead of trusting what God had given me, which was the ability to read the book and follow directions, I went into third world mentality. I grew up in India. Oh, this has come from America, it must be good. So I threw out all the stuff that I had learned. And I read it a fourth step with this four column thing, and I was driving myself crazy. But it's from America, and I'm sober longer than my sponsees. So I'm convincing myself against my will to believe this stuff. There was a beautiful couplet in the third edition in the story section. In one of the stories, there was a couplet which said, he who is convinced against his will is of the same opinion still. I still remember that. It's in the third edition. And that's what happened to me. And here I was doing this new four column inventory and then trying to convince all my sponsees why it's right. And it was terrible. Terrible. And then I got an opportunity to come to the U.S. and, you know, I prayed over it and I said, "This, you know what, this is not working." So I threw that out and I sat down and I dug out, I found this old paper that I had. You know, when I was first listening to the tape, this is my first fourth step. I still have that paper. Sat down and did the notes based on what I'd heard on the tape.
That's it?
That's the framework from what I...
God, I would love that.
And,
Easy, pal.
And like Eric, you know, the book doesn't say you need to do this fourth step every year or do it 10 times a year or not do it 10 times a year. But every time I'm working with someone through a fourth step, there's usually stuff that I need to do. I heard a couple of other, three or four other versions of the fourth step while I was getting sober. Listen, just take this paper and you make a whole list of your assets and liabilities. The 12 and 12 refers to that, but the 12 and 12 is written 14 years after the big book. It's an essay. It's like for more developed sobriety. Assets and liabilities. I had so little self-esteem by the time I got sober. I had zero assets. And I wasn't willing to look at any liabilities, so I don't need a fourth step. Then somebody else gave me the seven deadly sins fourth step. And I was totally anti-religious and forget it. Sin, I don't need that fourth step. Then I met this great guy. I wanted him to sponsor me. He said, look at me, I'm sober 25 years. I've never done a fourth step. You don't need it. I said, you need to be my sponsor. But then the next week, I was going to ask him the next week, but he wasn't back at the meeting, and I asked why, and they said that he was drinking, so he went off the list.
Wow.
And so those are, then the first fourth step workshop we had at my old home group in India, I actually managed to get hold of a fourth step inventory workshop from a highly respected treatment center out in the Midwest, and I didn't understand it, but what the heck? Let's give it to everybody else to do. And I made tons of copies and gave it to people. And I'm sure someone must have got sober from that. But I didn't do it. I just distributed those copies. So that's been my experience with the fourth step. A couple of months ago, somebody sent me a really nice email by a guy called Cliff B. And he was referring to Bob B., the Northwest delegate who had spoken to delegates at the 1974 conference, and it was a really, really nice article. So I'm going to try and paraphrase it, but I want to read that out as part of this this session. And then I'm going to end with a quick run through step 1, 2, and 3, and then we're going to break for some coffee and fresh air, and we'll come back and go straight into step 4. I'm going to use that, so if you want to... Yeah, that's the one.
I didn't know if you had
it. We both have the same. The title of this thing is called What Happened? Now, when I started reading the big book, I was totally impressed that in the foreword to the second edition, they said that 75% of the alcoholics stayed sober. 50% stayed sober at once. They came to AA and never drank again. Another 25% had a few relapses and then never drank again. And if you want to be a technical guy like me, I read two lines further down and it said, and of the remainder, 2 out of 3 came back. So I went into my math mode. 2 out of 3 is what? 2 out of 3 out of the remaining 25, that's another 17. Wow, that's a 92% recovery rate. And then I looked around the meetings, and this is my challenge to everybody sitting over here. Just do this as an exercise. Count the number of newcomers that come in every year and see how many of them last till the end of the year. Are we keeping 9 out of 10? Or are we keeping 1 out of 10? I don't know what happened. And this question was going through my mind. What happened? What's happening? What's happening? And then somebody sent me this email article and I was totally impressed. I personally, for a living, I worked in the treatment center industry. That's what I do for a living. By the grace of God, I work at a rehab where during my hiring interview, my boss said to me that he wants every client to leave our rehab with a black belt in the 12 steps. This is ice cream. So I really get to help these guys learn the steps. You know, I don't 12 step them, I don't sponsor them, but we help prepare them for our rooms. And so when I read this article, it made such sense to me. My personal opinion is that the change in AA began in 1957. In 1957, the American Medical Association accepted alcoholism as a disease. And from that day onwards, people with a whole lot of alphabet soup behind their names got to write treatment plans.
Became a business.
Yes, it is. And before that, people who had actual experience in how to drink and how to stay sober were helping other people stay sober. So I'm going to try and read this, and I hope it'll help you think. What happened? The question is being asked a lot of alcoholics lately. What happened to our high success rate? 30 or 40 years ago, we were keeping 75% or more of the alcoholics came to us for help. Today, we aren't even keeping 5%. What happened? What happened to that wonderful AA group that's been around for 20, 30 or 40 years? There used to be 50, 75, 100 people at meetings. I remember this. It's a matter of history now, gone. More and more groups are folding every day. At almost every meeting I go for and someone says, are there any other AA-related announcements? Yeah, so-and-so group and so-and-so place need some support. Can you guys please come? I hear that a lot. We hear a lot of ideas, opinions, and excuses as to what happened, but things are not improving. They continue to get worse. What's happening? In AA Comes of Age, Bill W. wrote, in the years ahead, AA will, of course, make mistakes. Experience has taught us that we need to have no fear of doing this, provided we always remain willing to admit our faults and correct them promptly. Our growth as individuals is dependent upon this healthy process of trial and error. So will our growth as a fellowship. Let us always remember that any society of men and women cannot freely correct its own faults must surely fall into decay, if not into collapse. Such is the universal penalty for the failure to go on growing. Just as each AA must continue to take his moral inventory and act on it, so must our whole society if we are to survive and if we are to serve usefully and well. And that's in AA Comes of Age. So what really happened? And Bob B., the Northeast Ohio area delegate in 1976, he said, we are no longer showing the newcomer that we have a solution for alcoholism. We are not telling them about the big book and how very important that big book is in our sobriety. We are not telling them about our traditions and how important they are to the individual groups. Rather, we are using our meeting time for drunkalogs, the discussion of our problems, ideas and opinions, and not there is a solution. I've been around for about 17 years now, and I can say I agree with the next bit of experience, and I know some of the old timers here have experienced that. I experienced that in India when people started coming in from treatment centers to our meetings. What's happened is we've permitted newcomers to convince old timers that they have a better idea. People who spent 30 or more days in a treatment facility have been told it didn't make any difference what their problem was. Just go to AA. It has the best program. Go to an AA meeting for the first 90 days out of treatment. Don't make any major decisions. And what they have been said goes on and on. This is directly contradictory to what's actually in our program. It sounded like a good idea to us old timers, okay, to have people who came in from 30 days of treatment who had not done the 12 steps and who did not know how this worked to be able to convince us that they knew how to get sober and stay sober. I remember when I got sober, this is what we were told. And I was told this clearly. You're insane. You're nuts. You can't think. We will think for you. You want to speak? You can speak when you've done the 12 steps. As soon as you've done the 12 steps, you can speak. Till then, you need to sit down, listen, get a sponsor and do the work. That's what they did in the old days. I was blessed and fortunate to have it was a spiritual experience. In 1997, I met a lady called Celeste R. Celeste R. was in Manhattan, and she died in 2000 with about 53 or 54 years of sobriety. Celeste got sober in the early 1940s. She attended the same home group as Bill W. and some of the people there. And she was telling me how they did it back then. She said, you came in, you sat down, and you listened to the stories. And when you listen to the story, if you could identify, you were then left to make a choice whether you wanted what we had, what the speakers had, which was a sober life, or whether you wanted to go out and do some more research, make the decision. It was that simple. Nobody said 90 meetings, 90 days and all that stuff. They just said, this is my story, this is how I drank, and this is how I'm sober, and these are the changes in my life. Would you like that? And if they said yes, and this is what she said, then she was assigned a sponsor, and she was taken through the steps in 4 weeks, and then they went out sponsoring people. So intergroup would call us, and we went out and we got people and brought them to meetings, and we did the same, thing over and over again. So we know what the problem is, and now we know what the solution is. And the question for each of us in this room is whether we want to be a part of the problem or whether we want to be a part of the solution. I made my choice years ago. I want to be a part of the solution. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to go through this timetable for working the steps, another great piece that somebody sent me and which I use. And we have copies of it, so Phil's going to give them out as soon as we go through this. And actually, you can give them out now, Phil. We can start distributing those. It's the top bit. We've been advised on many occasions to take the steps. But just how is this to be done? We've seen lengthy tracts which claim to provide complete guidance to the alcoholic in navigating the steps. There's a simpler approach. Start with the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. So, question number one. Hey, when can I take the steps? Anybody?
Immediately.
Page 58. If you have decided you want what we have, then you're ready to take the steps. Now, here are some considerations. How do I know that I'm like you or if I want what you have? If you have a drinking problem, you hope you pause in reading one of the 42 personal stories and think, hey, that happened to me. Or more important, yeah, I felt like that. or most important, yes, I believe this program can work for me too. When people ask me to sponsor them, I suggest to them, I share my experience and this is what I did. I said, when I got my first big book and I read that line, I took a blue highlighter and I went through my book and I only read the stories in the back. And every time I read something that happened to me, I highlighted it in blue ink. Wow, crashed a car, lost a job, this, that, I highlighted it in blue ink. And every time I identified with a feeling that I had felt, shame, fear, guilt, remorse, anger, bitterness, this, I highlighted that. If I flipped through my book and looked, and I found at the end of that process that I had identified with dead people, old people, young people, women, gays, straights, lesbians, transgenders, Americans, Canadians, black, white, all colors. I said, that's amazing. I've identified with every single person and every single story in this book. Today, I have never attended a bad meeting. I go for a meeting and I sit down in front if I can, and I always have two questions in my mind. Has that happened to me? And have I felt like that? So even if the guy is going on for 37 minutes about his drunkalog, I'm going to find something to identify with. So I haven't attended a bad meeting with these two questions. Important stuff to consider when preparing for step 1 and 2. And there's some good information here directly out of the book. Among physicians, the general opinion is that most chronic alcoholics are doomed. And then a description of what leads to the relapse. Restless, irritable, and discontented unless they can again experience the sense of ease and comfort that comes at once by taking a few drinks. Not one drink, not a few.
Doomed.
Doomed.
Can you imagine seeing that on your chart while in the hospital?
Hello, doctor. How am I going to do?
You're doomed. Medical term. Doomed.
Here's the question. So if you've read the stories, and if you've identified with the authors of the story, and you're considering that you're an alcoholic, you might be asking, what do I have to do? The main purpose of the program is to show you precisely how those first 100 recover, as Eric said at the start. Main problem centers in the mind, not in the body. First step, only two questions. If when you honestly want to, and you find you cannot quit entirely, or if while drinking, you have little control over the amount you take, you're probably alcoholic. And I had to be honest with myself. How many times did I try to quit entirely? Every Monday morning. Many times midweek, I never tried to quit entirely on Fridays, Saturdays and Sundays because I knew I was going to get wasted. So I honestly tried, failed miserably. Or if while drinking you have little control. They didn't say no control, little control. Because sometimes I didn't have control. But a lot of times I didn't. And again, I failed miserably with that too, for years and years. So I had to accept that I was an alcoholic. And I had to accept that my troubles were of my own making. Nobody ever tied me down and poured alcohol down my throat. They may have convinced me to stay. Nobody ever locked me in a room and said, you're not going home till you drink. They threw me out of rooms and said, go home, you're not drinking. And then the first step in recovery, at the end of that page, is we learned we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were alcoholic. And this is the first step. I had no problem conceding to you guys. Yeah, I'm an alcoholic, my name's Roy. Nobody wanted me anymore. At least you people said hi. You said keep coming back. I'm Roy, I'm an alcoholic. Couldn't admit to my innermost self. The second step also, some great stuff over there. The stuff that I highlighted over there is stuff that helped me in my experience because I could not or would not believe in God at the time that I came in. As soon as we were able to lay aside prejudice and express even a willingness to believe in a power greater than ourselves, we would commence to get results. I love that. I didn't have to accept your concept. So when therefore we speak to you of God, we mean your own concept of God. The two questions for step two experience. Do I now believe, or am I willing to believe that there's a power greater than myself? That's all. Not God, just a power. And if you're okay with that, you may or may not answer the second question at this time. You could answer it at any other time. Either God is everything or else He is nothing. He is or He isn't. What is my choice to me? And that was the second step experience for me. So, steps one and two are really something that we need to be internally convinced with before we can go ahead with step three. And the first 59 pages of the big book and the doctor's opinion gives us tons of evidence of how we are powerless physically and mentally. So we want to end this session with the third step, and then we can go out to smoke and come back and we get right into the fourth step. So for those of you that would like to have a third step experience, I would suggest that we all say the third step prayer together. And then we can end this session. We're supposed to start at 10. We could start at 10 or 5. Yeah? And have a smoke, grab some coffee and bagels. And, well, Jack, I forgot. We'll next session. And so those of you that wish to, if you want to join me in the third step prayer. It's on page 63 of the big book. If you want to follow along with that. And it says, God, I offer myself to Thee, to build with me and do with me as Thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I might better do Thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of Thy power, Thy love, and Thy will of life. May I do Thy will always.